Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, March 26, 2010. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
The dollar moves higher. Corn and wheat make new lows for their moves. And the trade awaits next Wednesday's key USDA reports. Are there any grain bulls left in the market? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Victor of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question. The U.S. dollar made a breakout to the upside this week, clearing its trading range for the past month. What are the implications for the economy in general and grains in particular of this higher dollar? Mike Zuzolo.
Well, I wonder, Dave, if it really meant that much this past week. It seemed like Greece was a primary dollar was a primary benefactor to the Greece issue, and it was also a primary benefactor to the Portuguese debt rating being lowered again, and it was really all about the dollar and the euro this past week. So I didn't take too much away from the dollar trade. I would say that, as we discussed on Friday, if that June dollar goes back below 81.70, which is the old contract high, then we're probably back into a trading range type mindset, and that might help the grains later on. I think as time goes on and the spring goes farther into the middle part of the year, I'm going to look more and more at interest rates and less and less at the dollar as far as potential fund flows.
Bill Mayer, are there any non-weather cases to be made for to be bullish grain commodities over the next 30 to 60 days, or is the bull in hibernation?
Well, I think when you look at the corn market in particular and look at some of the guesses out here on the acreage report next week, you've got a wide range of guesses. In fact, you could probably make the case 500 to 600 million bushel difference from high end to low end. So I think that continues to create some volatility in the corn market, and I believe that we can see after we get that acreage report on Wednesday, depending on where it comes out, we could see the corn supported. You could make a case for lower carryout numbers if you get much below that 89 million acres.
Wayne Nelson, Friday we saw some short covering in grain futures, but is it just a matter of time in your mindset before grain commodities continue to grind lower? And if so, what levels might we see over the next 2 months and why?
Well, Dave, you know that I've been a bear to this market for quite a long time. We ground down a lot harder this week than I thought we would with the report being out next week. I mean, we've still got the idea that it's up in the air what the stocks will be. Has there been an increased usage of corn for feed because of the lower test weight and lower quality? You know, we're talking a lot about the weather and whether we'll be get out, whether we can get this corn planted. We had lunch with a fertilizer dealer that said they have put nothing on as of now, and they're way behind as far as getting anhydrous on. They're worried about what things can happen. The ethanol usage is, you know, unfortunately, the profit margins have sort of shrunk, and we aren't blending as much as we want to. So all those things, unless we see some surprises in the report, there's a little reason to be a little bit positive. But overall, we've got a lot of corn. We've got all those extra wheat acres, the extra CRP acres coming back in, and we could see corn drop another 50 cents and beans another 50 to 75.
Some producers are still not marketed for new crop. what are their options at this point? And we'll check in with all of you, beans and corn, please. And we'll start with Bill.
Well, I think if your options are the options probably at this point. I like the idea of coming in on the corn side of things, maybe looking at getting a put purchase and a call sale to give you some range of prices, but get some protection under the market if you don't have the comfort level on your sales at this point. A 10 to 15 cent move higher in the market, and I'd probably just go ahead and make the cash at cash grain sales. On the soybean side, I guess I still think that there's profitability in the cash levels we have out here for next fall. I'd make sales there, and there's also some strategies that could be utilized in the options that could be put on.
Mike?
You know, I think what we're looking at, I think, Dave, in terms of March Madness, you know, in the spirit of March Madness, we're looking for a game changer. And ever since last winter when the commodity index funds were going to start buying and the USDA was going to start lowering supply on the winter reports, those were the two major things that we had going for us, especially in the corn and the wheat markets, and we just didn't get that. And we're still looking for that game changer, a lot like probably what USDA gave us on Friday for the hogs and pigs. That was a game-changing report. So if you can't get that off of the USDA March acreage report and the grain stocks report, I think you use the fact that the wheat's at a 3-year support line. The trader boat is very tilted towards the short side. Most of the traders, in terms of a boat, they're very, very short, very few longs in the market. And we've got very oversold technical oscillators right now. So those are the three things going for you that we can get a bounce out of this report. Even if it's not bullish, as long as it's not bearish, I think we can get a bounce out of it. But I'm like Bill. I think you use paper positions and you hedge in corn especially and in wheat especially because you're not profitable anymore in the corn and the wheat at this point. Beans, I think you're still profitable enough to get a little bit more cash selling done. Now, having said that, if you do get short and you feel like you're getting short in the bottom, then you have to be watching for the technicals. You got to be watching for resistance levels. For me, that November bean market, 9.55 close above, all shorts out of the water. 4.12 close above in Dease corn, all shorts out of the water. I really won't care about the fundamentals at that point. I'll just say, okay, the charts are back on my side. It's the wrong time of the year to be short. Let's go ahead and at least lift out a part of our hedges and keep it paper at this point because of that lack of profitability in feed grains.
Wayne?
Well, I agree with what Mike just said about looking at those points, even if I do feel very bearish along the way. And I do think if you do sell stuff, you want to pay attention to those stops. You know, we read on many of the wires today that there's no longer any doubt the major price trend for the 2009 corn crop is down. But the fact of the matter is, as Mike said, there's a lot of things that can cause a little bit of a bounce. We like selling calls above the market. We like selling rally or any bounces in this market. The rallies won't be long or extended. We don't feel we'd catch up that way. But we don't feel like just selling things in the hole. If we can get a little rally before the report, a little short covering, we would do a little pricing.
May wheat had a high on the week of 4.92 3/4, a low of 4.64. May wheat finishing the week at 4.64 3/4, down 19. July, the settlement there, 4.78, down 18.5 from a week ago. May corn, a high on the week at 3.76 1/4, a low of 3.54. May corn settling the week at 3.56 1/4, down 18.25 from last week. December corn, the settlement at 3.85 1/2, down 18 from a week ago. Soybeans, the May high, 9.76 1/2, the low, 9.41 3/4. May soybeans finishing the week at 9.52, down 9 3/4 from last week. November beans, settlement there, 9.18, down 24 from a week ago. We've got two big reports coming out on Wednesday, the annual perspective planning report and the quarterly grain stocks report. What is the most important thing for us to keep our eye on and why, Bill?
Well, I guess I think the acres, of course, report, of course, will be important. But I think the stocks on corn is going to be a very important number. It's hopefully going to be more accurate than we had on the December 1st stocks when there's still a lot of corn out in the field. And give us some idea of not only where our production ended up, but hopefully how much we're using here for the first half of the year. And I think that because it was probably not accurate in December, has a chance to have some surprises in it.
Wayne?
Well, I'd agree with Bill. At the stocks numbers, what we have to see, are we using more corn for feed than what is projected? You know, the export numbers, that's published every week. We can pretty well subtract that off. The guesstimate of where the yields are going to be. I know Purdue came out with the average yields for the counties yesterday, and Montgomery County, where I live and where Newmarket is, was on the very high end of things. So, I mean, we've had some good production in our area, and they look like they're going to say that it stayed high. So if they're using the numbers we're gathered for this, why, unfortunately, we'll probably be disappointed. But if they use some Northern Illinois, we're going to see things set back. But all in all, I think, we're going to have to question, are they going to include all the acres we lost that weren't planted to wheat and weren't, are they coming out of the CRP? Will they show up in this report?
Prospective planting estimates have been all over the board for corn, from 87 to almost 91 million acres. Mike, what is your estimate and its reasoning, and what numbers do you believe will be bullish or bearish for corn on Wednesday?
Well, the numbers have been all over the board, Dave, because you can't get a handle on what the eight principal crop acres are going to be, let alone the three crops of wheat, corn, and beans. 2008, we had 225 million acres of wheat, corn, and beans. This year, with the agricultural outlook numbers, USDA is saying it's down to under 220. I think a lot in the trade are looking at much, much bigger than 220 for those three, even with increased cotton acres, increased other acres, maybe like durum. So my mindset is I'm going to, based upon the survey that I sent out to clients, there was a lot of rotation back to corn, and there was also a lot of plant. 40% of the survey respondents gave me feedback that they were going to look at more beans. So the likelihood of having both bigger corn and bigger beans is there. So I'm in the camp that it'll be over 220 in terms of those three major crops. I'm coming in at under 88, though, on the corn and putting a little bit more on the beans for that reason. I think... Wayne and Bill hit it on the nose with the corn. The other thing, what has supported the beans, or what has supported the corn this last month? It's been the beans. And what is going to keep the bull spread in the beans inverted, where the front end is premium to the back end? And I think it's got to be that bean stocks number. If we come in with a bean stocks number under 1.2 billion, I think your bull spread is still very good and very much alive. If you go over that number, though, we might go back to a carrying charge market in beans. That adds to that downside that Wayne was talking about in the corn market.
Bill.
Well, what's the question, Dave?
The question regards the prospective planting estimate for corn, 87 to 91 million. I guess the issue that I keep coming back to is Wednesday set up to be a highly volatile day with either a big move up or a big move down?
Well, I guess I think that as far as the acres go, I think that as we go into the week and get the report out, the next thing that the market will focus on is what the weather looks like over the 8 to 14 day into the middle of April. So I think it could get some reaction if it's a surprise to the market. But as we saw last year, we came into the report similar to what we did this week. The week before the report last year had a kind of a bullish surprise on the report, moved higher, and then started to kind of drift down. I guess I feel like the outside markets and the dollar and some of those factors are still about as important once we get this report out of the way again as what the supply-demand side of it is right now.
We also had a hogs and pigs report on Friday, the quarterly variety. All hogs and pigs on March 1st at 97%, kept for breeding 96%, kept for marketing 97%. Wayne, what do you make of the report?
Well, we sold off all week in the hogs, and we got a bullish number, so we should see a little rebound come Monday morning here as far as things go. The bad thing about this hog and pig report is that means there isn't as many hogs to eat more corn or more meal. But the hog farmers, they definitely need a little bit of bounce back in price. They've had a rough couple years, and we'd like to see them get back to a profitable level because we do need to keep our feed use up in the U.S. That is one of our big things to use. But all in all, hog market higher, that's going to be a little rough on the corn market.
Wayne, why do you think that the lean hogs in the April contract were down so hard, 367.5 from last week?
Well, you know, they'd taken quite a run up, and we saw a couple of the big funds that had liquidated through the week here that way, and they had large positions. So, I mean, that was sort of a lot of people rushing for the door at once was one of the big things.
Mike, we have about 30 or 35 seconds left before we have to call it quits on this segment of the show. On the speculation side of the market, what's your best bet for the moment, any commodity?
Oh, golly. I tell you, Dave, I've been long natural gas for the specs and been taking a beating, but I believe that once that April contract goes off the board, I'd be looking for a low in the natural gas as we get into summertime, especially if these economists are correct that we're going to come back in terms of the global and U.S. economy.
In about 2 minutes, we'll hear from Joe Victor of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Snow in northern Illinois last weekend and some rain and cold weather central and south quickly was replaced by milder weather this week. That was, however, until another strong low brought rainy, windy, and colder weather back to the state late Wednesday and on Thursday. By Monday, the high temperatures were back into the 50s north and 60s south, and by Wednesday, highs were in the 60s statewide with a few 70s south. Average temperatures this week ranged from 2 to 3 degrees above normal across the state. A strong low-pressure system that came out of the central Rockies and moved across the southern Midwest produced rainy, cold, and blustery weather on Thursday. Rainfall amounts of from 1/2 to 1 inch were common across central Illinois, with some locations seeing higher amounts. Only a few hundredths of an inch fell across northern Illinois. Another low-pressure system will bring more rain to Illinois late this weekend, perhaps into Monday, but then it looks like we could have a stretch of gradually warmer and dry spring weather most of next week. A cool start to the week will give way to highs in the 60s, and by the end of the week, highs may be in the low 70s. Once the weekend system clears out this weekend, it appears the earliest chance for any rain may be late next Easter weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzolo, Wayne Nelson, and Bill Mayer. Joining us today by telephone is Joe Victor, Vice President for Marketing at Allendale Incorporated in McHenry, Illinois. His duties include writing articles, research, and networking with information sources throughout North America. Thanks for being with us today, Joe.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it very much.
We have two big reports out next Wednesday. Is there a chance for the trade to be completely shocked by what it sees?
Given the present ranges that are out there, and of course, you know, I'm looking at some of the ranges that came out yesterday, and it's going to be difficult. You know, you're looking at corn range 87 million acres up to 90.2. You're looking at beans at 77.43 to 79.5. Going to spring wheat, 12.7 to 14, and durum wheat, 2.3 to 2.8. And there's still relatively good range when it comes to the corn quarterly stocks on and off farm, 7.3 to 7.7. Beans, a little bit tighter range, David, and that is 1.147 to 1.2. So if there is a surprise, it's got to be coming into the soybeans, as well as what I look at is primarily spring wheat and the durum. From an acreage standpoint, I don't see much of a surprise coming for corn or beans. We just finished unveiling on March 19th our 21st annual acreage survey, And I say that there's still going to be a surprise, and that is that we are not going to plant the other spring wheat. We're not going to plant the durum, and primarily for agronomic and economic reasons.
Questions for Joe. Mike Zuzulo.
Joe, the number you started out with, that's what I had so much difficulty with, whether it was the three primary grains or the eight principal crops. What number did Allendale start out with when they started their survey, or when they got their survey back?
When we got the survey back, we came out with 90.15 million acres, Mike, and that is 21st annual results. You know, at 90.15, what does that mean? We're using a trend yield of 160.4, and that gives us end stocks of 1.671 billion. That is less than the present ending stocks for this marketing year at very near 1.8 billion. We see that the December corn futures price topside 450 to 460. I'm not waiting for that level. And I totally agree with what your gentlemen are saying, and that is we get up to 420, 430. I'm using box option strategies both for corn and beans, but 420 to 430 certainly is a gimme as far as I'm concerned.
Why, Nelson?
Do you really think we can get back that high?
Well, a lot of it's going to depend on weather, and that is the part that I have a real problem with, is that when you look at where's the old crop corn that did not get harvested, that's still going through harvest, that's primarily Nebraska, Minnesota, the two Dakotas. Got to get that harvested, got to get it fertilized, got to get it planted, and that is going to be where the majority of the problems still exist, and that is 6 to 10 day forecast. I know for next week that we're supposed to be just, you know, like a possum eating peach stones, just smiling as can be, that we're going to have great weather. It only lasts about a week, and I agree. 8 to 14 day forecast suggests it is going to be as difficult, primarily in the Western Corn Belt. It's going to be as difficult in 2010 spring planting for corn as it was in 2009. We're going to have far from optimal growing conditions.
Bill Mayer?
Joe, when you look at all the factors that are out here influencing the corn market, fundamentals, supply and demand, weather, economy, the outside markets, the dollar, fund positions, what do you think over the next 60 days here will be the most important factor that influences the corn market?
It's got to be weather. It really has to be weather. And again, I'm looking under average-type weather conditions, and it is going to be, you know, when I get to 60% planted, and that's typically the middle of May, if 60% planted tells me that's when the market realizes that we've got the corn acres that we're going to get in. And I can tell you firsthand that when you talk to USDA, whether they want to believe it or not, the corn acres are going to get in. Whether you want to believe it or not, as far as USDA is concerned, that's when the corn acres are going to get put, or they will get put in. Weather is going to be a key. And, of course, if we have problems with the corn, not able to get the acreage in there, and I'm saying under average conditions, you're looking at $1,670,000,000 bushels, 12% end stocks to use versus presently 14%. What does it tell you? It's more bullish to the corn market, and it's ultimately bearish to the soybean market. But under average conditions, I don't know if we can get to $11 on new crop beans. But at $10.40, $10.50, I'm definitely interested. And the low, we feel, it's coming in at $8 on the beans, low for the corn. In case I didn't mention it, you're looking at about 315 to 320 low. And, of course, when do they come in? Harvest time.
Mike?
Joe, sticking with weather but shifting continents, does China's weather matter this year with the type of drought they've had in their central and southern areas? And do you have any intelligence from Asia whether they're more likely to, you know, import some corn this coming year, and when would that be?
Well, what they're doing, Mike, is they're importing DDG, the distillers dried grain from the United States, is going into southern China. And, yes, you know, when you look at corn, you look at wheat coming in from Australia, I find it very interesting that there was a time when China did not want Canadian canola because of blackleg disease. And all of a sudden, they're interested in Canadian canola. That disease is still there, but what it's telling me is that southern China, and of course, when it comes to rapeseed, an oil seed tells me that they're still interested in importing rapeseed or canola from Canada, wheat from Australia, and DDG is going into from the United States and going into China. And I see that being very friendly to the U.S. markets.
Wayne?
Yeah, we've seemed to have been drove around and chased around by what the dollar is doing every morning when we come into work. Do you feel that's going to, number one, will it continue? And number two, what trend do you think the dollar will have?
Well, the first of all, the trend, you know, we broke that trend higher, and primarily, again, you know, and I agree with everything that gentlemen are saying. Add into that, you know, the health care bill, and that's when we pop the dollar higher. I can tell you that there's a great deal of differential between perception and reality. Perception is a good day for the grains is lower dollar, higher crude oil, higher precious metals. But I can tell you reality says, and I've looked at January, February, and March up until Wednesday, I believe, this week, there is no correlation. And I don't care if you're looking at the dollar, if you're looking at crude oil, there is no correlation between those two markets and corn and wheat. That is something that, again, where do I see the dollar going? I agree with what Mike had said earlier. 81.70 is key support, pushing a little bit higher. But, again, you have to try to understand the difference between perception and reality. If the trade wants to believe that perception with a higher dollar pushes grains, bottom line, gentlemen, you know as well as I do, when people start to get hungry, what do? They ring the U.S. dinner bell.
Bill?
Yeah, Joe, there was some talk the last week or so here about maybe some feathers being ruffled between China and the U.S. and, you know, the currency and allowing it to float or reevaluating it. Is that something that producers should be concerned about out here, or is that just talk, or where are we at on that from your estimation?
Great comment. You know, great analysis looking at it. And, again, it's saber-rattling, but the bottom line is, again, 1.3 billion people need to be fed. And when I look at the kind of crush levels that China continues to point onward and upward, bottom line is, where else are they going to get the soybeans from? Are they going to wait until March or April when South America comes in, or are they continue to grab soybeans from the United States? And again, October, November, December time frame, primarily from the United States, a lot of saber rattling, but the bottom line is you still got to keep the people fed. And when it comes to protein stocks, China doesn't have it near as much as they have starch stocks.
Joe, thanks for being with us today.
David, I appreciate it. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Joe Victor of Allendale Incorporated in McHenry, Illinois. We would like to thank our panel, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can access Commodity Week programs and listen to daily agricultural programming on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.